Hello, everyone. Welcome to the fifth episode of the AJSP Editors Podcast. This is Kim Pong Tam, and we have two more hosts here, Angela Leung and Sammy Khan. As you may already know, if you have listened to our previous episodes, this podcast series is a new initiative we started last year. And this is the fifth episode and the first one in the year of 2022. We have two objectives in this series. First of all, to introduce publications in the Asian Journal of Social Psychology to the global psychology or social psychology community. And second, to nurture the next generation of Asian social psychologists. In each episode, we have two sections. The first section is editor's pick. The second is a special topic discussion. Now, without further delay, let's begin with our editor's pick. For each published issue of the journal, the three of us, we pick a paper that we want to discuss in greater details. We basically focus on the summarizing the key points of this paper and also discuss the strengths and also make some suggestions for future directions with respect to that paper that we pick. And the paper we pick today is actually a pick by Sammy and Angela, and I also like it. The title of the paper is Why Do Team Members Help Each Other? Investigating cross-level antecedents of organizational citizenship behavior. I will let Sammy to lead us in the discussion.
Thank you, Kevin. So this paper here, Why Do Team Members Help Each Other? Investigating cross-level antecedents of organizational citizen behavior by Cao and colleagues is the paper that I've selected. And I found this research to be really interesting, and it can probably be categorized as lying in the intersection between organizational and social psychology. Organizational psychology, not really my comfort zone, but I was really enticed by the research after having read the introduction, the method and analysis section. And I thought the scope of the data and analysis was impressive, and it seemed to be breaking some new ground in the field. So the key construct that's investigated in this research is organizational citizenship behavior, can also be referred to as OCB. That's how it's abbreviated in the paper. And OCB refers to pro-social behaviors among team members in organizations. And these behaviors can include identification with the organization, altruism towards other members, maintenance of interpersonal harmony, and also protection of organizational resources. What's really key to understanding organizational citizenship behavior is that these behaviors are voluntary in that they're not enforced by organizations. There's no direct formal reward system in place within organizations to encourage citizenship behaviors. They're not specified in job descriptions of employees. So that means that they're initiated by employees or team members themselves. Importantly, organizational citizenship behavior is argued to provide team members with psychological and social support in carrying out their jobs. And research has also shown that organizational citizenship behavior is predictive of increased productivity, promotion of teamwork, and also adaptation to changing work circumstances. Based on previous research, it's somewhat less clear as to what exactly predicts organizational citizenship behavior. Is it the personalities of team members, or is it the norms prevailing within a working environment of an organization? So that's really the key question that the research addresses. So on the one hand, there is some evidence, mixed evidence, to suggest that personalities of team members, particularly altruism, fosters organizational citizenship behavior. On the other hand, there are work environment factors at an organizational as opposed to individual level have been found to predict organizational citizenship behavior. And often previous research has not considered both individual and organizational factors and how they interact with one another in the one and same study. And this is really what the research does. It looks at both individual and organizational predictors of organizational citizenship behavior. So regarding work environment factors, they investigated two variables, team member exchange and team interdependence, respectively. So team member exchange, or TMX, refers to the extent to which team members engage in helpful behaviors based on the relationships that they have with other employees or team members. Team interdependence refers to the extent to which team members rely on one another and share responsibility to successfully achieve organizational goals. Considering these constructs, the researchers formulated six specific hypotheses. The first hypothesis was that altruism on a dispositional level would be positively associated with organizational citizenship behavior. The second hypothesis was that team member exchange would be positively associated with organizational citizenship behavior. And the third hypothesis was that team interdependence would be positively associated with organizational citizenship behavior. So up until this point, the hypotheses are quite straightforward. Altruism, team member exchange, and team interdependence were all hypothesized to be positive predictors of organizational citizenship behavior. The remaining three hypotheses concern interactions between individual, social, and structural factors in predicting organizational citizenship behavior. So the fourth hypothesis was that team membership exchange would moderate the positive association between dispositional altruism and organizational citizenship behavior. So this means that altruistic personality trait should not be as important for organizational citizenship behavior when team member exchange is high. Or in other words, when the team culture is defined by team member exchange, altruism at an individual level shouldn't be as significant or even non-significant predicting organizational citizenship behavior. Similarly, the fifth and sixth hypothesis stated that the associations of altruism at an individual level and team member exchange at a team environment level, their associations with organizational citizenship behavior would be moderated by team interdependence. So this means that team interdependence is ordered the highest in the hierarchy of variables. High team interdependence should have the most explanatory power in predicting organizational citizenship behavior. The sample that was drawn upon by the researchers was from the Taiwan military, and it consisted of 90 companies and 270 platoons. Almost 98% of the sample was male, and almost 66% of the sample was under the age of 25. And it was a survey design, and the survey itself assessed the four key constructs: altruism, team member exchange, team interdependence, and organizational citizenship behavior. And all of these constructs were measured using validated instruments that have been adapted for the context of the research, which was a military context. Altruism and organizational citizenship behavior was assessed at the individual level. However, when they assessed team member exchange, a dyadic approach was adopted, and that involved every team member rating the helpfulness of one another to basically derive an average score for every team member. And along similar lines, team interdependence was assessed at an individual level, but scores were then aggregated to the team level. So there are different levels at which these variables are being assessed. And the researchers also controlled for age, gender, education, and tenure in the unit in the main analysis. And the main analysis consisted of a multi-level analysis. What I thought was a particularly good feature of the analysis was that the researchers conducted a confirmatory factor analysis before they proceeded with the main analysis to evaluate the construct validity of the three independent variables in the study, which were altruism, team member exchange, and team interdependence. So this statistical step then made sure that the variables, in fact, were distinct from one another and assessed separate constructs. The multi-level analysis in itself involved examining cross-level effects between altruism, team member exchange, and team interdependence. The first step of the model specified altruism, team member exchange, and interaction between altruism and team member exchange at the first level of the model, and actually found that only team member exchange was a significant predictor of organizational citizenship behavior. This supported the second hypothesis. Given that altruism and interaction between altruism and team member exchange weren't significant in predicting organizational citizenship behavior, the first and fourth hypotheses were not supported. Team interdependence was found to be a significant predictor of organizational citizenship behavior in the second level of the model, and that supported the third hypothesis. Team interdependence didn't moderate the association between altruism and organizational behavior, but it did moderate the association between team member exchange and organizational behavior. So this means that when team interdependence was low, team member exchange was more strongly predictive of organizational citizenship behavior. However, when interdependence was high, team member exchange was not associated with organizational citizenship behavior. So this means that the sixth, but not the fifth hypothesis was supported. Just to reiterate then, the first hypothesis that altruism would be positively associated with organizational citizenship behavior was not supported. The second hypothesis, that team member exchange would be positively associated with organizational citizenship behavior, was supported. And the third hypothesis, that team interdependence would be positively associated with organizational citizenship behavior, was supported. The other three hypotheses about the interaction found that team member exchange did not moderate the positive association between dispositional altruism and organizational citizenship behaviors. This means that the fourth hypothesis was not supported. And similarly, team interdependence wasn't found to moderate the association between altruism and organizational citizenship behavior, which means that the fifth hypothesis was not supported. So with regard to the interaction, it was only team interdependence that was found to moderate the association between team member exchange and organizational citizenship behavior in support of the sixth hypothesis. So yeah, that's my summary. These are the key points. And from here, I thought it would be worth discussing some of the strengths of the paper. So Kevin, did you have any thoughts about what you think are the main strengths of the paper?
Yeah, so maybe I can share my thoughts first and then Angela. I have a personal preference for studies using multi-level analysis. I like this type of research because I personally think, you know, individual behavior is very often kind of embedded in a context, right? So in terms of our research, we should approach human behavior by situating, you know, individuals in their context. So in this case, right, individuals in terms of the platoons and then the context in terms of their teams, right, in the military. I personally use this type of conceptualization, theorization and methodology a lot in my research, in my cross-cultural research. Similar logic in the cross-cultural research, you understand individual behavior by situating it in its cultural context. So in terms of the research approach, you consider not only individual level factors, but also contextual factors, right? It could be the team structure, or like here, team communication or team exchange, but it could be something like culture, right? Cultural dimensions that psychologists study. So the multi-level theorization and research methods allow us to examine the effects by these two set of factors, individual factors, contextual factors at the same time. And another strength of this type of analysis allows us to examine cross-level interactions. So it allows us to see that a human behavior is not purely determined by individual level factors, is also subject to the inference of contextual factors. But more than that, inference of individual level factors is also subject to the inference of the contextual factors. So this type of analysis, I think, allows us to see human behavior in a way that it's kind of more integrated by taking into consideration personal level things and also the context. So that's the thing I like. I think that I like the approach of thinking about behavior by considering both the individuals and its context. So in this case, a team. Another thing I like in the paper is the use of the sample, which is an interesting sample, right? Military teams in Taiwan, right? It's something that you don't frequently see in research. You're usually more likely to see papers using students and participants, or in the case of studying organizational behavior, usually like office settings, you have organizations, business organizations, you have employees working into different units or different teams. So that's more, I think that's more typical in organizational behavior research. But in this specific study, researchers use military teams in Taiwan. That's something I'm happy to see. I'm happy to see the use of different people from different backgrounds and people of different organizational settings. So these are the two major strengths that I see in the paper and my personal life. How about Angela?
Yeah, thanks, Kevin, for your insights. I actually have quite a long list of things that I like for this paper. And as mentioned by Sammy and Kevin, I really like the research taking a holistic, multi-level perspective to understand citizenship behavior. So the analysis has a very in-depth examination of OCB by considering individual level, interpersonal level, and team level variables. And what's more, I think the results are very promising to show that these different levels of variables do not work in isolation. They actually contribute in tandem to have an impact on employees' citizenship behaviors. Also, I like that this cross-level interaction hypotheses are motivated by a theory. So I think it's important that there is a theoretical motivation behind the predictions. And the theory is a classic one concerning the differential effects between strong versus weak situation proposed by Walter Mischel in the late 70s. So the findings show that in strong situation posed by high team interdependence, it can actually weaken the effect of altruistic personality and team member exchange on OCB. So I think this is a theoretically motivated prediction, and that is observed in this research. And so the findings demonstrate the importance of acknowledging person by situation interactions and how sometimes the broader situation can trump individual and interpersonal factors to affect our behaviors. So I think that the theory behind and also the findings are very interesting to me. And apart from the theoretical framework, I commend others for collecting very valuable dyadic data from commanders and soldier leaders in the military team, as Sammy also mentioned. So the OCB data actually came from the commanders, not the soldier leaders. So I think to me, it can reduce the social disability bias, right? Because if we just directly ask the soldier leaders whether they have exhibited citizenship behaviors, there may be social disability bias involved. But the researchers actually removed this problem by asking the commanders how the soldier leaders perform in terms of citizenship behavior. So I think that's a good thing in terms of measuring OCB. And also the researchers adopted the social network method to take into account the consensus of team members in evaluating team member exchange within the team. And they also ensured good within group agreement for computing team interdependence for the analysis. So I think these are all very good practices to strengthen the measurement validity of the constructs. Another strength of the paper that I like is the rigorous data analysis conducted to interpret the data. I think this point also was mentioned by Sammy, that I really appreciate the authors first presented a confirmatory factor analysis to establish the three-factor model, because there may be some concern whether team interdependence and team member exchange are conceptually distinct. And this CFA actually confirms that these three variables are conceptually distinct constructs. So I think that's a very good thing about the paper. And also the results section was written very clearly and concisely. Everything is very easy to follow. So I think that is also a very big plus for this paper. So I guess I can pass the time back to Sammy to see whether he has any suggestions for improvement or future directions.
Thanks a lot for your insight into the paper and your comments. I wasn't able to communicate all of the strengths in summarizing the paper, but I agree with everything that has been identified. It's not my area of expertise. I suppose when I read it, I would be more curious about other dispositional predictors and whether or not it's just altruism that doesn't have a positive association, if there could be other personality variables or other dispositional variables that may have more explanatory power than altruism. And I'm also, I think in terms of future research, I would probably want to see some more observable behaviors that aren't necessarily self-rated even within the team by the commander, some kind of objective indicator of group success. I'm pretty sure that there exists research on that in the literature, but research in a similar way in that kind of perhaps combines data on the individual level with group level data, but that group level data is observable, it's objective in the sense that there's some objective indicator of how successful the team actually is. Given that it isn't really my area of research, I wouldn't necessarily know what the exact future directions would be. But if I was to say something, it would be that have some objective indicator of organizational success. And of course, testing this out in another organizational context that isn't the military, where one would expect there to be very high team interdependence. I would argue, I mean, I'm not a military person, but based on my understanding of the military, it relies on high interdependence. Just to show that this effect isn't just a consequence of the sample or the research context, that it's something that generalizes to other organizations as well. So I'll pass it back to Kevin. Did you have any suggestions with regard to future directions?
Yeah, I think I share your last point you just made about other organizational context, right? Because this specific study, researchers use the military, which I think is a plus, it's a strength of the paper. And the researchers found that personality in terms of altruism has had no insignificant effects on organizational citizenship behavior. So the question I have is whether it is just because it is military, right? That has a kind of a strong demand on, you know, organization, team interdependence, and less on, you know, expression of yourself, right? Is it because of that? So personality had no influence on behavior in this study. So it's quite interesting to see how the same model would play out if it is kind of replicated in other teams. So that's the point I shared with Sammy. And another thing, well, as Sammy just said, right, same feeling here, is obviously not my area of research. So I rather not to make very specific suggestions on future directions in terms of how to advance theories, etc. But I would like to take this opportunity to encourage researchers, you know, even those who are not interested in organizational behavior, to consider whether the multi-level analysis is something that is useful for their own research. Think about people who are interested in health behavior, or think about, you know, researchers who are interested in environmental behavior, right? In psychology, I think the predominant approach to health behavior, to pro-environmental behavior, usually is individual level analysis, right? Like to use values, attitudes. We have just rightly used theories like theories of planned behavior. The emphasis is always on the individual, right? So basically not considering the context at all. So the multi-level analysis is expressed very nicely in this paper. I think it's just a very nice reminder to all of us who are doing research interested in human behavior to consider whether the behavior of our research interest can also be understood through this type of multi-level approach. Think about health behavior or energy saving, for example. It's quite possible that, you know, it is also subject to what happens in the household, right? Saving energy at home, right? Is it really a purely individual behavior, or is that also to some extent also a decision by the whole family or by the household? If this is the case, then that means in our analysis of something that are used to be considered to be individual level, to consider contextual factors as well, to consider the team, in this case, family, maybe, or household, right? So that you can introduce this multi-level analysis into a study of health behavior, pro-environmental behavior, etc. And this paper serves as a very nice kind of model, even though it's about organizational research, organizational behavior. But I think the idea behind could be useful for other types of behaviors. That's something I would like to take this opportunity to encourage our listeners to consider, that maybe that's not what psychologists are usually trying to do. Usually think on an individual level, interested in personality, values, and then and predicting behavior. But introducing context into the research, I think that would be important, right? It's not directly a future direction about this area of research, but maybe a very broad suggestion I have here. How about Angela?
Yeah, thanks, Kevin, for your very inspiring point about encouraging more researchers to consider this multi-level analysis. I think as researchers, we should be more open-minded to try out different methodologies. Of course, this may be something new to some of us, but I think it's always good to enrich our toolkit to study something with more complicated data analysis. So one thing I can think of to maybe further extend the study is to apply this cross-level model to study other organization behaviors in order to test further the value of this multi-level model. Because the current research studied good behaviors, right? That is citizenship behaviors. So maybe the future research can consider extending the theoretical model to study bad behaviors, such as cheating behavior or unethical behavior in the organization setting, and also to go beyond the military context to study these behaviors. So I think if we can enrich the study with multiple behaviors and also go beyond the current military context in this present study, I think this can further test the utility of this theoretical model. There's a point that I can think of for further extension. Okay, so I think I'll pass the time back to Kevin to see whether he has other things to tell us.
We have a pretty nice discussion of this paper. I think that's the thing I like, this editor's pick section, right? We rarely have time to discuss a paper in this level of detail and then share our perspective with our readers and listeners. I think this is a very good opportunity for us to do that. And yeah, I just want to encourage our listeners to read this specific paper. And of course, the other papers published in the March issue of the journal. I hope the discussion we just had kind of serves as kind of stimulation for you in the interest of reading our papers. So I would end here. So let's conclude the section here. We will be back with the second section of the podcast today, the special topic discussion. Thank you. Okay, welcome back, everyone, to the second part of the episode today, special topic discussion. The topic today is the psychology of economic inequality and social class. Very happy today we have two guest speakers joining us. They have been contributing to our journal and also to the Asian social psychology community a lot. And the first guest is Hongfei Liu. He received his PhD at the University of Hong Kong, is currently affiliated with the Beijing Normal University. The second guest is Bono King, who received his PhD also at the University of Hong Kong, and is also now affiliated with the University of Hong Kong. We invited them both because they are the guest editors of the special issue we just published on this topic in the March issue of the journal, right? The Psychology of Economic Inequality and Social Class. Welcome, Hongfei and Ron.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Kevin, for inviting us to this podcast.
Yeah, we're happy to have a chance to discuss this special issue. It took maybe around 2 years to, you know, from the conception to the completion, the publication of the special issue. I think it took 2 years or maybe more.
Yes.
Yeah, already it's 2 years.
it's a long journey, right? To prepare the concept and then, you know, solicit submissions and then view papers and to the...
And the pandemic happened, Kevin, in the middle of all those things.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So very happy that it's finally published. A lot of interesting insights from this special issue. Okay. So we have a special topic discussion on this special issue. I want to first start, we always start with this question with our guests. A general question just about let our listeners know a little bit more about our guest, right? The very first question in this discussion is about the journey, okay, the love journey with psychology. So how did you two fall in love with psychology? How did your journey with psychology begin?
I should thank my PhD supervisor, Professor David Watkins at the University of Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. So my PhD thesis examined cultural influences on self-esteem. So David recommended me to read a lot of papers in social psychology. So I still remember the most impressive articles I read at that time were a special issue published in Psychological Bulletin in 2004. So in that issue, many researchers have discussed the theories of self-esteem, including Tyrell Mandelman theory, self-determination theory, social meter theory, and etc. So this special issue opened a window to me to understand social psychology research. Mm. And then several years later, I happened to read Professor Shiji Oishi's article, Socio-Ecological Psychology. I found that research in this field really intrigued me. And almost at the same time, Runel recommended me to read a book, the book, The Spirit Level. So this book was written by two epidemiologists in UK. So they are Richard Wilkinson and Kate Pickett. And mm-hmm. in this book, they provided some preliminary evidence on the impact of economic inequality on psychological consequences, such as subjective well-being, trust, and educational achievement. So the theoretical reasoning in this book is very inspiring to me and is in line with the traditional social psychology theories. And also, the book has very strong influence on the society. It can predict many daily life consequences. So since then, I started to research the role of economic inequality in psychology.
Okay. Thank you, Hongfei. Have a run.
Okay. Thanks, Kevin. I think a lot of my social psychology journey has actually been with Hongfei, who was my classmate. And we shared the same supervisor at Hong Kong U. But earlier than that, I think I first fell in love with social psychology during my undergraduate years as a undergraduate student in psychology. And I had a wonderful mentor for my honors thesis project. Her name was Christina Montiel, who incidentally was also an editorial board member of AJSP before her retirement. So her research was on peace psychology and how that can be used to understand social problems in the Philippines, especially in the South. And she later introduced me to Professor Alan Bernardo, who is one of the foremost social psychologists in the Philippines. And that's how I came to know that social psychology is a very, very interesting field. And my first international conference was actually the AASP conference in India, hosted by AASP. So I think a lot of my journey is very social in nature too, that my love for social psychology has also been influenced by the people around me.
I see. I just forgot to say when I introduced Ron and Hongfei that they are both associated with our journal. Hongfei is now our current associate editor. Ron is one of our editorial board members. I also want to take this opportunity to thank them for their contributions to the journal.
Happy to contribute.
Yeah, thanks. Yes. All right, so let's move to the discussion about psychology of economic inequality and social class, right? That's the topic of the special issue, also the topic of our discussion today. I think Angela and Sammy have prepared some questions to ask, right? Angela.
Yeah, so thanks again, Hongfei and Wano, for sharing your love with social psychology with us. So turning to the special issue, so the special issue topic is about economic inequality, and it definitely is a very important topic. It's a topic well-researched in social science and behavioral science disciplines, such as sociology in particular. So compared to these other disciplines, what are the strengths or key features of psychology that can make it useful for studying the problem of economic inequality?
Thanks, Angela, for this very good question. So when I reviewed the articles on economic inequality, I found that most of the articles were published in sociology and also in public health and politics journals. They have very different approaches from psychology. In sociology, researchers are more interested in society-level phenomenon. For example, they like to examine the whether economic inequality would affect well-being overall in the big population. And regarding the measures, the sociologists usually rely on large-scale survey data, for example, some nationally represented data, survey data. But our psychologists have different perspectives. So we want to examine the individual level phenomenon. If we examine the effects of inequality on well-being, so we would be interested in the both main effects. We also want to examine whether, for example, social class would modulate the effects of inequality on well-being. And we are also interested in psychological mechanisms underlying the relationship. So in my opinion, this is a kind of a theoretical advantage of psychology compared to sociology. In terms of measures, so psychology has advanced the methodological research in this area. For example, psychologists have recently developed psychological skills to measure perceptions of inequality. And we also use experiments to prime perceptions of inequality. So in this way, we can answer more research questions than sociology.
Thanks, Hongfei, for sharing with us the insights about how psychology can contribute to studying social class and economic inequality. So perhaps a follow-up question to your sharing just now. So what are some key theories or research findings in the psychology of economic inequality and social class? Maybe you can give us a few examples.
I'll take the ball, Angela. And okay. Thanks for that question. I think when we talk about economic income inequality, social class, a lot of us think about material resources and material mechanisms and economic mechanisms like diminishing marginal returns, financial scarcity, etc. But I think what psychology is especially good at is showing us that income inequality and social class also gets under the skin, and they have very powerful psychological consequences. And I'd like to focus on two mechanisms. The first one would be the status anxiety hypothesis, which talks about the idea that in highly unequal societies and unequal contexts, individuals are much more sensitive about their social standing, and they're very anxious about their status. That leads to a whole range of psychological consequences. The other one would be how income inequality affects trust, social trust in particular. And we find that in highly unequal societies and regions, people are more mistrusting. The social fabric is more frayed, and that also increases the gap among individuals. And that is one of those two mechanisms, I think, are very powerful psychological explanations for how income inequality gets under the skin.
So, Sammy, you have other questions for Hongfei and Wano?
Yeah, I do. Two questions, and I'll combine them, both of them. One is broad, the other one is a bit more specific. So there are 7 empirical papers published in this special issue. And I'm thinking if you can identify a common thread within these ones with regard to conclusions that can be drawn, overall conclusions that can be drawn from the special issue. And also perhaps highlight a particular paper or a particular finding that you think is particularly interesting.
I think I can answer the first question. So thanks, Sammy, for the question about the special issue. My overall impression is that the findings in the special issue have shown robust effects of inequality and social class, a wide range of psychological and behavioral consequences. So the articles covered topics of internet activities, prosocial behavior, consumer behavior, perceptions of social mobility, subjective well-being, and academic achievement. So I think these findings have broadened our understanding of the consequences of inequality and social class. So that would be very useful to enrich the series, the psychological series of inequality. And another impressive point I would like to highlight here is that in this special issue, the articles were drawn from a diverse range of countries and regions, so including Asia, North America, and Europe. So it means the diverse samples in our articles suggest that the impact of inequality is not limited to any specific country or culture. So the worldwide investigations will be needed in our future research.
I'll take the second question to that about a particular paper that I'd like to draw attention on. So personally, I find my co-editor's paper, Perceived Income Inequality Increases Status Seeking Among Low Social Class Individuals, as one of my favorite articles. But let me take a step back and talk about some practical observations that I had even before the scholarly consideration. So one of the things that really puzzled me, and I do know some people who are engaged in this behavior, is that people will save up a lot of money, maybe a month or two of their salary, in order to buy an expensive positional good, like, for example, an iPhone or a MacBook. And in the Philippines, it's quite common that people save up to maybe 1 to 2 months of their salary just to be able to afford these things. And that phenomenon is not confined to that context. In Chinese, we have this term called yue guangzu, which means people who live on paycheck to paycheck, and probably some of them are really spending a lot of money on positional goods. And the worst story that I've actually heard was a couple of years ago. This was all the rage in the social media in China, was someone selling his kidney in order to be able to buy an iPhone, mm-hmm. right? So those are really scary observations, and they don't make rational sense. Why will people who have scarce economic resources spend so much of their money and what they have in order to buy these goods? But what this research by Hongfei and his research team shows is that in highly unequal societies, people really are more concerned about their social status, right? And one way to signal that social status is through buying luxury goods, positional goods, doing luxury consumption. And especially the effect is much more salient among people with who have lower social class, as what his research has shown. So I think this paper also sheds light on a very common phenomenon that we might be observing that might not make sense, right? Like keeping up with the Joneses, buying cars that are beyond the budget. But what we find is that these are not just irrational behaviors that we could blame people for, but maybe the context, particularly income inequality, plays such a huge role in people's decision-making.
Thanks a lot for that. That's really fascinating. I think if listeners weren't motivated to read the special issue before listening to podcasts, they'll definitely be motivated to do so now.
The story Ron just shared with us, I think it highlights the power of psychology explaining things, right? It just sounds irrational, right? That it can be understood, it can be explained if you understand human psychology, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good example, right, of the power of psychology. I just want to follow up this discussion about this special issue, right? As Sammy just said, there's 7 articles, empirical articles, and Ron just picked the one that, you know, is most impressive to him. And Hongfei also give us kind of broad understanding of what special issue shows. I also want to highlight that the special issue actually end with a very nice review and critique by Professor Shigehiro Oishi and his colleagues, which we also strongly recommend to our listeners. So I have a question. It's a little bit more about looking forward, maybe. So based on your experience in this area of research, based on your own observations of the papers in special issue, and of course, based on the review by Professor Oishi, what do you think are the kind of, you know, the emerging trends in this area of research, okay, in the study of the psychology of economic inequality and social class? What are some emerging trends in terms of research directions or in terms of research methodologies? And what are some gaps that you see in this area of research that you really want future research to address?
I think I can talk about the emerging trends, and then Ronel can discuss about the future directions. I mentioned earlier, psychology has very different approaches from sociology or politics. So in sociology, researchers, including politics, they commonly examine the influence of objective income inequality. So objective inequality is usually measured with Gini index. That's the income disparities between the rich and the poor. But according to recent findings in psychology, people often misperceive the actual inequality. For example, in the United States, people underestimate inequality. But in some European countries, people overestimate inequality. So considering the discrepancy between actual and perceiving inequality, I think that would be very crucial for psychologists to examine the perceptions of inequality and its effects. So Professor Oishi also highlight this point, the perception of inequality, in his commentary paper. In this special issue, I'm also very pleased to find that several articles are focused on perceptions of inequality. So I think this is an emerging trend in psychological research. Several labs in the world, including the labs in the US, in Spain, and also my team in China, are working on this direction.
Talk about the next one, about the gaps in this area of research that you asked, Kevin. One of mm-hmm. the gaps that I think Professor Oishi also talked about was adopting a cultural perspective to the study of social inequality and social class. So I think that's one of the gaps, a cultural perspective. And the other one that is very interesting for me is about the moderators mm-hmm. of income inequality and social class as well. Because when we look at the first generation, I would call that first generation research on income inequality, we usually look at direct effects, that inequality has broad, universal mm-hmm. negative effects on a number of psychological outcomes or social outcomes. But I think the next step, a more interesting step, would be to nuance that, because we also know that income inequality will affect people differently. So, for example, people from different social class, people with different personalities, cultural backgrounds, and political orientations and ideologies might be affected by income inequality to a different extent. So I think we can complement the existing research on the universal broad spectrum effects of income inequality with like research on nuances and moderators and mechanisms of those inequalities.
Thanks a lot for this sharing about, you know, the trends and also the gaps in this area of research. I personally hope that, you know, listeners to this podcast and, of course, readers of that special issue, that after listening to the podcast, after reading this special issue, become interested or more interested, okay, if they're already interested, but more interested in this topic, and then maybe consider starting their own research. Of course, particularly true, I think, for students and early career research, we definitely need more research about income inequality, social class, because basically that's the fact that we have to deal with, right? In many countries in this world, inequality is a fact, right? So maybe we can end this discussion with a very last question here about maybe kind of some advice for students or for someone who is new to this area of research. Now, for someone like that who wants to step into this area of research, what do you recommend them to do or maybe to read? So what is the starter that they should look for? Of course, this special issue, I suppose. But other than that, what your personal experience, any recommendation?
I think for new researchers, they may start by reading some review articles or several books in this field. For example, Professor Oishi has, and his colleagues have written several excellent review papers, including mm-hmm. the commentary paper in our special issue. And in terms of the books, like in 2010, Wilkinson and Pickett had published the seminal work, The Spirit Level, Why Equality is Better for Everyone. And around 10 years later, in 2019, they published the second book, The Inner Level, to introduce mm-hmm. the empirical advances in the last decade. So I think these books and articles could be a good start for new researchers to understand what have been achieved in this area.
I'll follow up on that. Like you were saying, Kevin, about advice. Maybe my general advice would be mm-hmm. to be persistent and be curious. We all know that scientific publishing is very difficult and also requires a lot of effort and energy and curiosity. But I think especially difficult in terms of income inequality, because it is a topic that straddles different disciplines. Mm. So sociology, economics, political science, social psychology, etc. And one of the challenges that I have personally faced when doing interdisciplinary research is that it's very hard to convince reviewers across a broad spectrum of disciplines. And inevitably, you will get reviewers from different disciplines because the topic you're interested in is cross-cutting and cross-theoretical and interdisciplinary. But I think it pays to be very persistent, because let's not lose sight of the fact that income inequality is not just a topic of scientific interest, but it's also a very socially impactful and a very important social reality. As you've mentioned, Kevin, it's a reality for a lot of people living across the world. It's becoming even more salient now in the COVID pandemic, which has really increased the disparities between the rich and the poor. And one of my favorite quotes from astronomer Royal Martin Rees was that he says that most practicing scientists focus on bite-sized problems that are timely and tractable. And the occupational risk is then to lose sight of the big picture. So I think it pays for us as psychologists to remain curious and not to lose sight of that big picture when we do research on income inequality and social class, even as we face a lot of challenges in getting those things published and promoted. Yes.
But that's a very useful insight, Ron. I think, of course, it applies not only to this specific area of research, right? I have similar feelings in my research about environment and behavior. Very often it's interdisciplinary. And I agree that you should not lose the sight of this, the big picture, what's happening in this world, and then how do you how to be persistent and curious in generating insights that could be useful, not only in a scholarly sense, but also in this practical sense, right? Thanks for sharing with us your insight, Ron. And also, Hongfei, thanks for telling us these books or these materials that we can read. I think we will ask you later if you can share with us more information that we can actually put it into our podcast description. So our listeners can easily just click and then find these books or materials that you recommended for them. So I think that it's time to end our discussion today. I think we can spend more time talking about not this special issue or this topic. Unfortunately, we have limited time. So we better stop here. Once again, I'd like to show our gratitude to Hongfei and Ron for not just joining us today, but of course, editing this special issue for the journal. I know it is not easy to edit a special issue. It's a long time commitment, right? It takes several years for it to come into completion. Really appreciate your effort, your contribution to the journal. And well, obviously we'll continue to work with each other. So once again, thank you, Ron, Hongfei.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you, Kevin, Angela, and Sammy. I think Hongfei and I also want to thank Professor Alan Bernardo, who is editor-in-chief, who also ushered us into this and helped us with it. With a special issue.
So listeners, stay tuned. Look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Bye-bye.